My name is Jennifer Venice, and I'm speaking to Dr. Margaret Ng, member of the Legislative Council of Hong Kong from 1995 to 2012, and one of the founding members of the Basic Law Article 23 Concern Group. She continues to fight against restrictions of civil liberties in Hong Kong as a member of the renamed pro-democracy group, the Basic Law Article 45 Concern Group. In April this year, she was arrested on charges allegedly relating to the 2019 Hong Kong pro-democracy protests that blocked a controversial extradition bill. Dr. Ng, thank you for joining me today.
Thank you.
So we're speaking shortly after China's imposition of a new national security law on Hong Kong, which critics have actually called the end of Hong Kong. What do you think the new security law means for Hong Kong, really, and its pro-democracy movement in particular?
The national security law came as a shock because we have no inkling of it. Hong Kong people have no say in the law. It is so draconian and so pervasive that it seems that it is a complete intrusion of the Chinese system into Hong Kong's legal system, so that we don't know what is left of the legal system in Hong Kong. It created draconian offenses, and you can commit any of these crimes by inciting other people to do. We're still grappling with it, but it seems that there's nothing we can do about it. And that is why it inhibits everything that we have been doing.
Do you think there is any way that freedom of expression, as you've known it so far, can continue to exist in Hong Kong? I read any literature deemed threatening by Beijing as being purged from libraries and schools, and Hong Kong's chief executive, Carrie Lam, has refused to guarantee press freedom.
She said that she would guarantee press freedom if the press can guarantee that 100% of the press members will obey the law 100%. You know, so this is really an insult. The most ordinary things that we do, for example, to show banners, to say, for example, the popular slogan, Liberate Hong Kong, Revolution Now, already you may have committed the offense of separatism, which can lock you up for 10 years or even a life imprisonment. All of these things were so sudden, it happened on the 1st of July, that what you are used to becomes suddenly illegal. The most absurd part of it was that a young woman just held up a blank piece of paper and she said, I don't know what I'm permitted to protest now. It seems that all we can do is to show a blank piece of paper. And yet, a few days later, when a group of people show blank paper, they were arrested for offense against the national security law. The awful thing about this offense is that the police are given wide powers, new powers, special powers, search without warrant, detention, seize of property, forcing you to give information and so on. And none of this power is reviewable. The chief executive can just make a law to give them all these powers. And if you are arrested for national security offenses, you're not tried by an ordinary judge. It has to be a judge who is designated by the chief executive. And in the worst cases, they said in some cases, China may exercise the jurisdiction directly, which means that you will be sent back to China to be tried in a court in China under Chinese law. And that means you have no protection whatsoever. The interpretation of the law is in the hands of the National People's Congress Standing Committee, not in the hands of Hong Kong authorities. And if there's any inconsistency between the Hong Kong law as we know it and this new national security law, the new security law will take priority. They created a whole system of law enforcement, of trial, which is separate from the existing system of law. This whole decision of whether you belong to one of those special cases which has to be tried in China is not something that Hong Kong has any say in. And once you are arrested for that, you will not get bail. It's the reverse of the bail system we know it. It does everything that the extradition bill that we opposed so hard last year does, and something even worse. We feel that this is a very unjust kind of law, and it is a breach of all the promises made to the Hong Kong people. The most fundamental principle of one country, two systems, that is what gave us the sense of safety, of being protected in the past. And even though our freedom was being gradually eroded, at least we had confidence in that fundamental protection. But what happens in this national security law is that this whole 1-2-2 system is just torn up. It's just repudiated. The Joint Declaration is not given any regard at all. We don't know what we can do to resist this law. It's not in our power to overturn it. Now, we don't know what the international community can do to make China remove this law or not to apply this law. Article 29 of this national security law called collusion. So if you invite the international organization to sanction Hong Kong or to sanction China, that is a crime under national security law. So we don't know what it is that we can do in the international community without risking being found guilty of this law.
You were talking about Article 29, collusion. Does that article essentially ensure that Hong Kongers have no voice to seek international support for any cause at this point?
We're worried that this is what it may mean. The Bar Association in Hong Kong is worried that the normal kind of contact between a profession, the same profession in different parts of the world, when we say this is something which happens in Hong Kong and we don't think that it should happen, and we invite our counterparts over in other parts of the world to voice support for us, that may fall foul of Article 29. All these very serious offences for which you can get a life imprisonment are not clearly defined. It all depends on the authorities which enforce the law. And we know that the enforcement agents are not like anything that we are accustomed to so far. The ultimate effect, if you would succumb to fear, is that you're afraid to tell anybody anything.
Do you think that you and other pro-democracy leaders will succumb to that fear?
Once you're arrested, and if you're arrested under the national security law, you may be locked up. You may not be able to get bail. But I don't think that we would keep silent. For example, I'm talking now. I am saying that this law is not right. It is not right for Hong Kong. Now, what other people choose to do for us or with us, it is their business. I think Hong Kong people are still voicing their discontent. They are finding ways of expressing themselves. For example, a very dramatic way, which happened over the weekend, was this Democrats' primary, when over 600,000 people came out to cast their vote. So Hong Kong people still have a great deal of energy to find ways to express their views. But I'd be not honest with you if I say that they are not afraid. They are acting in spite of their fear because they think it is important for them to stand up for the freedom of Hong Kong.
When COVID-19 hit, many of those protesters didn't feel safe protesting anymore. And I wonder actually whether the inability or that particular inhibition on protesting created the right climate for Beijing to push the security law through.
COVID certainly came at a time which make it easier, a lot easier for the government to get the law through. But even before that, although we have the freedom of peaceful demonstration, our public order law says that you have to get a letter of no objection from the police. COVID-19 gave them an extra weapon, which was very powerful. from the 1st of January, we have not been able to hold any of these demonstrations without very high risk of being arrested, either for public health reasons or for public order reasons. And of course, the world is busy dealing with COVID-19 in their own countries. And so when they have been very actively following the protests in Hong Kong in 2019, they suddenly find their hands full. I'm grateful that in spite of this, the concern for Hong Kong has not stopped.
I wanted to ask as well, last year we saw violence from both sides during the protests, with violence from Hong Kong police coming as a huge shock to many, many protesters. And now the right to protest itself is obviously in question as well. At the IBA Human Rights Institute showcase at the IBA annual conference in Seoul in 2019, you said, when the rule of law breaks down, violence becomes inevitable. Has the rule of law been broken beyond repair in Hong Kong?
This is a very, very strong feeling in Hong Kong. And we as lawyers have a hard time persuading people that the rule of law is not yet dead, although it is in dire straits. We have even a stronger duty to make sure that prosecution follows prosecution policies which are fair, and that when people are arrested, they are given their right to see the lawyers, that they are not maltreated. All these accusations of being tortured, of being assaulted when you're in police custody, some threats that even during an arrest that you will be handled roughly. And when people actually finally appear in court, they feel that the court sometimes show a greater prejudice against the defendants. So all these things together gave people a very strong impression that the rule of law is breaking down. The government has been acting so very differently from what they should if they obey the rule of law. And that kind of anger make people do violent things, because they think that if they're arrested, they're going to be subjected to horrible torture. And so their companions would use any force that they could to save you from being arrested, because the fate is so horrible. Now, we have been demanding that there be an independent inquiry into the whole business of police brutality. But the government refused to do this. As to the police brutality, you can see that it's almost a common purpose for the police to subdue a protester by kneeling on his neck. When the police chief was questioned, he said that there is no evidence that this is always going to, no fatality have been caused so far. So he doesn't think that he should prohibit it there. All that put together, I think, makes for a very pessimistic outlook for violence to stop in Hong Kong in protest. So far, no police officer have been under investigation with any serious result at all.
You mentioned the use of police force in the kneeling on somebody's neck, and that has obviously now got a direct parallel to the United States, where George Floyd was killed after a police officer knelt on his neck. I wonder, could the attention on the United States and the concern about police brutality during arrest there have an impact on that push for inquiry in Hong Kong? Or do you think that the security law has prevented that inquiry from ever happening, regardless of the attention on the issue in the wider world?
Even before the national security law, the police in Hong Kong has been using the United States case as a kind of weapon against the protesters. See, the United States, whom you like so much, so hope you hold up as a model, they do worse, so we are fine. And so Black Lives Matter was used as a phrase to taunt the protesters by the police. The response of the security secretary was that no fatality has happened so far. We do not expect any police force anywhere in the world to be perfect. We don't expect that nobody ever makes any mistakes. But we expect that when a mistake is made, when something wrong is done, when the public protests, that the government will take notice. What happens in Hong Kong fundamentally is that the government refused to take notice. They refused to say that the police is wrong in any way. And now, once you have the national security law, somewhere it says that if you if you criticize the police, if you actually instill any kind of hatred of the police, that is unlawful.
Let's talk about your arrest back in April, which came alongside 14 other well-known pro-democracy figures, including Hong Kong's so-called father of democracy, Martin Lee, and media tycoon, Jimmy Lai. The charges against you allegedly relate to those protests of 2019. How did you feel when you were initially arrested?
When I first had any inkling about my arrest, it was very sudden and I was quite shocked. Ever since the handover, we were worried that one day that our freedom will be taken away from us and we have no way of defending ourselves. And so we have always been on the alert and we're hoping that this won't happen. The same morning, different teams of police went to different homes to arrest these people. So I felt very much that the day of being protected by the rule of law is coming quite close to an end. That was what gave me the feeling of something ominous is going to happen to Hong Kong.
Is there anything that you think I haven't addressed in my questions that you really want us to convey to the wider membership of the IBA and to the public in general?
I think the rule of law is always a thorn at the side of those of the government. And so people defend the rule of law. We'll always have to face that. And as the IBA shows, we are indeed not alone. And that is a comfort to us in Hong Kong.